Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and I'm delighted to have you with me today. We have with us Robin Martinez, my good buddy from Denver. And hi, Robin, how are you?
Hi, Joyce. Doing great. It's always good to be back on Powerful Patient.
Great. And things are beautiful out in the mountains, I hope.
Oh, yeah. It's usually nice here. We get a day or two of bad weather, and then it clears up.
That's great. And we have a special guest here today to talk some more about MRI safety. And this is Dr. Peter Caravan. Dr. Caravan is with the Massachusetts General Hospital. He's an associate professor of radiology. Welcome, Dr. Caravan.
Hi, Joyce. Hi, Robin. Thanks for having me on.
And thanks. So I'm very interested to hear about your work in developing new probes or tracers, what do they call them, for use with PETs and MRIs and other imaging. Tell us about what you're doing.
Right. So I've been working at Mass General Hospital for about the last 10 or 11 years developing new molecules for imaging with MRI, new contrast agents that in some cases are more specific to a certain type of disease, or also using another imaging modality called PET imaging, positron emission tomography, and again, developing probes that are very specific to certain diseases, like looking at things like pulmonary embolism, cardiac thrombosis, and as well, we've also been interested in the safety of contrast agents that are used in MRI, and so another area that we've been working on is alternatives to what we currently use in the clinic. So currently, the contrast agents that patients would get are all based on a metal called gadolinium, which is a metal ion that's not present in your body, and there's some concern around the safety of this metal ion, and so we've been looking at ways to replace it.
So help me out. What's the difference between a probe and a contrast agent?
Well, that's a good question.
That as needed.
Sure. So when we do imaging, there are some techniques that we use, like MRI or X-rays or computed tomography, CAT scans, where when we give so you get an image with an MRI, for instance, and if you give an exogenous molecule, something that's injected, like a dye into the patient, then what that
right.
does is it changes the contrast in the image. It doesn't make the image itself. It just changes the properties of the image. So that's why we call them contrast agents. And in other modalities, like in positron emission tomography, one doesn't get an image without having the probe, the molecule administered. And that's where the image comes from. It comes from an image of the distribution of that molecule, of that dye. So in one case, in things like MRI, we call them contrast agents generally. Probe is a general term.
So it seeks out a particular type of tissue and sort of lights it up so you can see it better?
That's right. That's the bulk of my research is to make these probes more specific for a specific pathology.
That's great. Thanks. So what alternatives have you found, if any, to using gadolinium in the contrast agents?
Right. So, I've been working in this field for, over about 20 years now. And before I came to Massachusetts General Hospital, I worked in industry for a while, and there I was also working in the gadolinium contrast agent field, developing tissue-specific contrast agents. And so I was very, very familiar with the area, and it's, you know, I was really drawn to this because MRI as an imaging tool is really tremendous. It's very safe generally. It doesn't expose the subject to ionizing radiation, so high energy rays, and the images that we get are really exquisite, and we can provide great detail at better than millimeter resolution. And when we use a contrast agent with that allows us to even build on these high resolution images. So you can use contrast agents to detect very small lesions, looking at early signs of cancer or metastasis, and we can also use MRI to measure things like function, like how blood flow to the brain might be altered after a stroke. So the power of MRI and contrast and then using contrast agents with MRIs is very, very appealing. But as I think you know, in around 2006, there started to be some reports of a type of fibrosing disorder. So this was a phenomenon where patients would get very stiffening around their joints, especially in their extremities. It was very painful, and this was associated with gadolinium-based contrast agents. They had had an MRI that used this gadolinium-based contrast agent, and sometime later, it could have been days to weeks to months later, they started to have these symptoms. And this was termed nephrogenic systemic fibrosis, and it was called nephrogenic, meaning from the kidneys, because it often occurred in patients with advanced kidney disease. And so this, once this was recognized in the radiology community, there was a really rapid response to this from the societies like the American College of Radiology and the regulators like the FDA and their analogous regulators in Europe and other countries. And what they did was to recommend that gadolinium-based contrast agents either be excluded or very limited in patients that had poor kidney function. And so, when that was done, the incidence of nephrogenic systemic fibrosis dropped to a very, very low level, almost to zero. So this had a great effect. And but I remember I at the time, a few years later, I was at the FDA at a meeting, and one of the FDA workers showed a graph of gadolinium-based contrast agent sales over time, and they were increasing over time because the use was growing. And then after nephrogenic systemic fibrosis occurred, then there was a big dip in sales. And when I started to think about this dip, you start to realize that the reason for this is because now we're denying patients with renal impairment these previously needed scans. So although we've solved a problem on the one hand, you know, the patients that had kidney disease were being imaged previously because they actually needed that diagnostic information. And now the question is, if they're not getting that diagnostic information, then how is their care being affected? And so that's what really set us out to try to find alternatives to gadolinium-based contrast agents.
Right, and I've been hearing that it's not always necessary to have contrast medium. And so improving the contrast, it's just like in a photograph. Black and white have good contrast. Gray and light gray and dark gray don't always show good contrast, and it's a little harder to distinguish one thing from another. So adding this contrast medium makes it a little easier, as I understand it, for the doctor and the radiologist to see the structure that they're interested in inspecting. Is that more or less right? And how do we know,
right?
How do we know when we really need the contrast medium, or what alternatives are there other than changing the agent? Can we do without it?
Right. So generally, you know, these practice guidelines are well established based on based on evidence that depending on your the suspicion of what the patient may have, what the pathology may be, you are either indicated for an imaging test with the contrast agent or without. So with in the case of MRI, for instance, about 60% or two-thirds of all MRI scans don't use a contrast agent. Similarly, with with CAT scans, we don't always use a contrast agent. But in some instances, we know that the images that we'll get will be much either not necessarily better with the contrast agent, but will provide information that we couldn't get without it. So, for instance, we do studies to look at in radiology to understand the sensitivity of a test, how good it is at picking up disease and not missing disease, not having any false negatives. And so generally, contrast agents really improve the sensitivity of tests. If you're looking for the presence of cancer metastasis to the brain, for instance, it's much, much, with a contrast agent, this is much, much more sensitive than without. And so, so I think one really has to consider that when you think about if there are alternatives, you also have to consider the information that might be missed by not using the contrast agent.
Right, right. So if you're looking for a crack in the bone, you can probably do that fine without the contrast. But if you're looking for what's a blood vessel and what's a little tumor in your brain, then you probably do need the contrast, something like that. Is that right?
Right, right. And, another area where it's sort of absolutely necessary is in, women that are at high risk for breast cancer. And so that group of women are urged to get to be screened with MRI. And it's very well established that, that in order to detect these small early cancers, the contrast agent is critical. It's really not, doesn't seem to be worth doing the MRI without the contrast agent in that case. So these are the questions that you have to consider. Yeah.
Robin, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, would you say that contrast agent is more called for when you don't know exactly what you're looking for or exactly where it might be?
Well, I think usually, when referring physicians order an imaging test, they're trying to rule in or rule out certain diseases, and so it's really case dependent. We use in neuroradiology, they use contrast agents routinely when there could be symptoms in the brain. It could there could be sudden recurring headaches, and maybe you've just started to get migraine headaches that you never had before, but maybe there could be a brain tumor, or there could be other types of brain pathology. So in that case, the contrast agent turns out to be very useful at ruling in or ruling out the presence of serious disease.
What about the machine itself? One patient told me that she was told that there were newer machines and that the reason that contrast dye was needed was because there were older machines that didn't have the best technology. Any truth to that?
Well, certainly there's ongoing effort all the time to try to improve the imaging quality, and that's definitely happening with time. And in certain techniques, using MRI to image the blood vessels, in certain parts of the body, that can be done without using a contrast agent. If imaging the blood vessels in the, for instance, in the neck, the carotid arteries, and this works quite well without a contrast agent. Other parts of the body, for imaging blood vessels, the imaging is more reliable with a contrast agent. But this is certainly an area that's an active area of research, and as the research matures, it becomes put into clinical practice. So there's definitely work going in that direction, but at the same time, there's also work going on to try to combine the power of newer machines that can create images faster or at higher resolution, and to combine them with contrast agents to see things that one couldn't see previously. So that goes in really there. There's really two sides of the same thing there, right? You can, in some cases, you can start to eliminate the need for contrast agents, and in some cases, you can make even more powerful tests.
So I heard you say that gadolinium is a heavy metal that normally does not occur in the body. And I think you were working on some using some other things that do normally occur that are sort of friendlier to the body. Tell us about that.
Sure. So what we've been working on new contrast agents that are based on the element manganese. So manganese is an essential element. We all have some manganese in our body. It's required for certain functions, and because of that, our bodies are able to take manganese from food and to a level that our bodies need and regulate it, and then excrete the manganese that we don't need. So there are ways in which your body can process and deal with manganese. And since gadolinium is not an essential element, we don't have gadolinium naturally occurring in our bodies, then our body doesn't really know how to process it the same way. And so we focused on manganese. Manganese was actually in the very first study that described the use of a contrast agent was by a guy named Paul Lauterbur. And Dr. Lauterbur won the Nobel Prize for MRI earlier in this century. And so he had used manganese in this case to provide contrast. And there, in the past, there have been there was another contrast agent that was based on manganese that was used for imaging the liver. And manganese, manganese is naturally occurring in certain foods like blueberries and pineapples. And there's even some radiology practices that will use blueberry juice as an oral contrast agent. So they'll get the patient to drink some blueberry juice if they want to image their gastrointestinal tract. So because of all of this, we thought that manganese would be a good place to start. Manganese turns out to have the right kind of physical properties like gadolinium that makes very good image contrast. And so that's what we've been doing, and we've been able to make a new contrast agent that we believe is, and we've shown that in our preclinical studies. So we haven't done studies in patients yet, but in all of the other studies that we've done, it appears to be equivalent to the gadolinium-based contrast agents, but of course it doesn't contain gadolinium.
Hmm. And well, so that's the body exciting. Knows. Yeah, so the body knows how to metabolize it and take what it needs but excrete the rest and do that in a normal manner. Whereas with some foreign substance, it sometimes seems to mount a kind of defense against it. Is that true?
Right. Yes, and so it could be, it could be stored somewhere in the body and kind of the body tries to wall this off and keep it from interacting with other things. But as I said, manganese, there's natural processes by which it's eliminated from the body. And so what we've done, the same. So what we do with gadolinium is we don't inject just this metal ion, but the metal ion has it's chelated, so it has a group of atoms that are surround the gadolinium, essentially putting the gadolinium in a little cage that makes it very water soluble. And generally, when we administer this to patients, it's mostly eliminated from the body into the urine. And so the concern with patients with poor kidney function is that the elimination of the gadolinium contrast agent is not as fast. And so what can happen is a small amount of the gadolinium can come out of the contrast agent and then be retained in the body. In the case of manganese, what we've done is exactly the same thing, where we bind the manganese inside a cage to keep it from interacting with the body, and it's eliminated intact. But because the ability of the body to deal with manganese, our thought is that should we get very trace amounts of manganese being released from its cage, that's okay. The body can still deal with that small amount of manganese and eliminate it from the body.
So, Robin, I don't want to trap on you. If you have a question coming,
go ahead.
Okay. So, things that we can do in the meanwhile, I heard you say that you haven't done human studies yet. So, presumably, none of this is yet on the market. But are you on track to do that?
Yes. So the technology that we developed here at Massachusetts General Hospital, this has been licensed to a small company in the Boston area called Reveal Pharmaceuticals, and they've raised money and they're raising more money to initiate clinical trials and the clinical development. So contrast agents are regulated the same way as other drugs. Although they're not themselves therapeutics, but they need to go through the same clinical trial path that drugs go through. So phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 clinical trials to show that they have efficacy in the sense that they can detect cancerous lesions, and also that they show safety, that they're not any acute adverse events. And so because of course these are diagnostic tests, and we want them you don't want to get sick after you have your diagnostic test, right? There's a very high bar that these things should be safe, and so these are the things that need to occur. So those are the steps that we're undergoing right now.
Great. Well, it's glad to know that that's in the offing. So meanwhile, what can patients do? Well, first of all, you said it's important to get this gadolinium out of your system as soon as possible. And so it sounds like you should be well hydrated. Drink a lot of water before so you'll pee it out in a timely manner. Is that a good one?
That's right. Yes, that's always good. Yes, same is true for if you have a CAT scan with contrast, get well hydrated as well. That's great advice.
Okay, and that's part of the interaction with the kidney insufficiency. If your kidneys are not up to the job, they were worrying that therefore you would keep it on board a little too long. So. Whether you have totally good kidney function or not, it's a good idea to drink a lot of water. And you mentioned blueberry juice. Is this something that people who have this sensitivity or are worried about it should be talking with their doctors about using blueberry juice in the meanwhile?
Well, the blueberry juice is really for a specific type of test, which involves imaging the intestinal tract. So it's okay. And that's something that generally we don't use gadolinium based contrast agents for at all. So it wouldn't be a replacement there. And there are a number of ways to image the GI tract. One of them, would be with the blueberry juice. But I think you know, this wouldn't be something that one could replace gadolinium with.
Okay, so in most cases, if people are just getting an occasional MRI, it's been shown to be extremely safe, and really don't worry about it too much. But there evidently are some people who are a little more sensitive, and if you're getting more than one MRI in a short period of time, or a lot of MRIs even over a long period of time, that's when you ought to at least be aware and concerned, right?
Right. And I think, you know, and again, I think to be very educated about what the purpose of those follow-up MRIs are for. And, you know, everything in medicine, of course, there's a risk-benefit to everything that we do, right? And some things that we do you know, have very low risk, like, you know, for instance, taking a Tylenol for a headache, you know, the risk of that to your body is pretty low. Of course, if you unless you take a whole jar, you know, things are usually
fine. Or
mixed with
alcohol.
Sure, right. There are ways in which it's not good, but there are other things,
right,
you know, where the risk is higher, and so, you know, for instance, like taking a biopsy, where you know you would insert a needle and take a piece of tissue, and so there's increased risk with something like that of causing the patient to bleed, or you know, nicking an artery, and so so those things are done, but the reason that they're done is to really detect, you know, often the presence of cancer, where of course, you know, that's the benefit, and that's why you take that risk. And so I think, you know, if you're thinking about this with respect to contrast agents, I think you need to think sort of the same way. I think the good thing now about the concern around gadolinium is it's got radiologists thinking about how they can reduce the usage of contrast agents, especially in patients that need to get scanned repeatedly. And so that's so, you know, they're looking at whether this always needs to be done. And in some cases, the answer is yes, and in some cases, maybe not. Certainly, in the field of, you know, I would say as an analogy, in the area of CAT scans, over the last 5 to 10 years, there's been increasing concern over the cumulative dose of radiation that one gets. So getting a single CAT scan is really not much risk, but again, you know, if you were being surveilled for cancer recurrence and you had to have a CAT scan every few months, then the buildup of radiation that you get to your body and the risk from that starts to increase. And so now in the radiology community, there's been a lot of attention paid to that, and so the amount of radiation exposure that one gets from CAT scans is monitored closely. Techniques have been developed to try to lower the amount of radiation used, and the same thing, I believe, is happening now with gadolinium-based contrast agents as well. Certainly, in the clinic, we work to give lower doses than what were used maybe 10 years ago. So again, the dose makes the poison. So if we give a lower dose, we have a lower risk of some sort of adverse effect.
Right. And I keep reminding people that all of this imaging stuff, with its risks, is a whole bunch better than exploratory surgery, which is what they used to do before we had all these wonderful imaging techniques. So, as you say, the risk-benefit ratio is very important to keep in mind, but also remember that just the ability to see what's going on in your insides is a blessing in itself, and so we have to calculate what's the potential benefit, and that's a conversation people should be having with their doctors, and so that they understand, why are we doing this, what is the medical question we're trying to answer, and is this the best way to answer it?
Right, I agree completely with that. It's very hard to make, you know, everything is going to be needed to be evaluated on a case by case basis, depending on, you know, your disease. But having that conversation is very important, and especially if you need to be, you know, if if the current standard of care is that you need to be imaged, you know, once a year or once every 6 months, then certainly having that conversation is very important. Do I need to be imaged every at that frequency, or could it be less frequent? And if that was to happen, what are the risks associated with not getting imaged? Those are very good questions to ask.
Mm-hmm. Robin, do you hear other questions from your community that we should cover while we have him?
It was interesting. Just the other day, someone questioned, saying, I'm having an MRI and they want to give me contrast, and I'm afraid the contrast is going to kill me. Literally, that's what she said. And so I reassured her that the only way that it could kill you, like right there, would be an allergic reaction, and everybody's monitored very closely for an allergic reaction. And if you have any kind of allergic problem, you should tell them in advance. And other than that, the risk comes if you have many, many, many experiences with the contrast.
That's right. And the risk of an allergic reaction, especially a very serious allergic reaction or a fatal allergic reaction from a gadolinium contrast agent, is extremely low. And I was just wondering if I had in front of me the numbers, but it's, you know, these are very, very safe. Things to be administered in an acute setting. They're safer than other things that we use in radiology, like X-ray contrast dye, for instance, which in itself is also very safe. You know, the incidence of an allergic reaction are in the 1 in 10,000 kind of range. And then those are for...
I was under the impression that there are a very, very few cases in which anybody has ever had a problem with reaction on the table or within a few hours of having MRI contrast.
Right, and we know, and you know, these are very widely used, so the medical community has experience now of these contrast agents in, you know, in over 100 million, patients worldwide. And so we really understand very quite well the acute risk of this. I think the concerns that your previous guest had on is that, you know, if there's a risk that of something that occurs later, that's much harder to find that link between the test and some new symptoms that occur, you know, at a time of weeks or months after the MRI.
Right,
and
it's never going to be a matter of, you know, you can have 26 of these, but don't have 27. It's never going to be that fine a distinction because everybody has different reaction and everybody's passing these contrasts through at different rates.
Yeah, and I'm concerned that patients are going to hear a lot more about in the press. I saw an ad on the internet the other day from a legal firm saying if you've had consequences of gadolinium, you may be eligible. Yeah, we're going to have to put this all in context, everybody. So don't flip out. Don't say, yes, I don't want to have it because it's going to kill me. That is not true. What is true is that you need to be aware that in some people there are concerns. The medical community is dealing with this. The radiologists are handling it very responsibly. And feel free to have that conversation with your doctor or with the radiologist. Yes, it's real, and it's a very small percentage. And I remember when my son was 15, he had his first operation, and the night before the operation, the anesthesiologist comes in and gives you this long litany of things that could go wrong. And as he's going through this list, my son is getting whiter and whiter. And so finally I said to the anesthesiologist, if you were Jimmy the Greek, what odds would you give me that any of those things are going to happen to my boy tomorrow? And he said, oh, are you kidding? None of them. You know? So, you know, you need to put it in that kind of context. If it's a 1% chance that something will go wrong and an 80% chance that you're going to get a much better answer from this imaging and your doctor will be able to put you on a good treatment plan, you know, I would take the risk. But you need to be aware and evaluate that for yourself with your doctor and feel free to do that. So thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Caravan. I really appreciate that and very much appreciate the good work that you're doing in trying to move us forward to a next generation of agents that will be even safer. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Good. Thanks. Thanks, Robin, for being with us. And thanks, everybody, for listening in. And we hope you'll be with us again next time. And meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Take care.